This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: Iran warns that the desecration of the Holy Quran could have dire consequences, saying that Sweden must not allow actions that promote violence and sow discord. Another Palestinian teenager is shot dead as Israeli forces conduct more violent raids across the occupied West Bank. And Ukraine has dismissed the country's ambassador to the UK days after the envoy publicly criticized President Volodymyr Zelensky. Hello and welcome, everybody. Our top story for this half hour: Iran's foreign minister has warned that the desecration of the Holy Quran will have dire consequences and called on Sweden to stop promoting violence and sowing discord. In a phone call with his Swedish counterpart, Hossein Ami Abdullahian said desecrating holy books and religious sanctities under the pretext of freedom of speech is unacceptable and unjustifiable. He called on Swedish authorities to arrest and prosecute the person responsible for the desecration. Tobias Billström, for his part, said Stockholm condemns the sacrilege and the desecration does not reflect the position of the Swedish government. Billström said Swedish police did not grant any permission for insulting the holy book of Muslims, adding that the permit for an assembly was abused. Iranians have held demonstrations across the country to protest against the desecration of the Holy Quran in Sweden. The rallies were held after Friday prayers of protesters voiced support for Islamic sanctities. They also condemned the Swedish police for authorizing another act of desecration against the Quran. Later in the day, people also staged a sit-in outside the Swedish embassy in Tehran and demanded the expulsion of the ambassador. Similar rallies were held in the capital cities of Iraq, Pakistan, and Lebanon as well. Meanwhile, the renowned Egyptian University Al-Azhar has called for boycotting Swedish products. Several Muslim states, including Iran, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar, have summoned their Swedish envoys. On Thursday, Iraq expelled the Swedish ambassador and recalled its envoy from Stockholm. The same day, Iraqi protesters stormed the Swedish embassy and torched parts of it. When we talked to religious activist and author Abul Faz Saburi about the desecration of the Quran in Sweden, he says such blasphemous acts against the holy book are in line with efforts to promote Islamophobia.
When we speak about freedom, the purpose of freedom, freedom of speech law, is to provide security for people to freely express their beliefs, not to insult the beliefs of others. And what kind of freedom in Europe? You see, in one country we see they protect a person to burn the Quran. In another city, or in another country, they close an Islamic center. In another one, they arrest a person because what he said, for example, about the Holocaust. So I think it's not about the freedom. It's about Islamophobia. This is the problem. Okay, they have problem with Islam, with the religion that invites people to justice, to be against oppression, to support the oppressed, okay, to that invite people to be united. This is the problem. So the only book that is the very, that we believe is very words of Almighty God, okay, and strongly invite people, not even just Muslims, even Christians and Jews, the people of the book, invite them to be united, to do their best for justice, okay? It's Quran. So this is the problem. This is the reason they hate the Quran.
Well, Iran has strongly condemned new EU sanctions over alleged military support for Russia. Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman said the EU claims that Tehran has provided Russia with drones for the war against Ukraine are baseless and politically motivated. Nasser Kanani also underscored Tehran's opposition to the war and called for a political settlement. The spokesman stated that Tehran reserves the right to take reciprocal measures over the sanctions. The new measures hit six Iranian individuals and prohibit export of components used in the manufacturing of drones from the EU countries to Iran. The U.S. as well as Britain and the European Union have already imposed sanctions on the Islamic Republic, citing the same pretext. Moscow has also dismissed the allegations. Israeli forces have shot dead another Palestinian teenager during raids in the occupied West Bank. The 17-year-old boy was killed when Israeli forces stormed a village north of Ramallah. Several Palestinians were also injured, one critically. Israeli troops also wounded dozens of people after attacking a funeral in a village northwest of Al-Khalil or Hebron City. The troops used live ammunition, tear gas, and sound bombs. The Israeli army further attacked an anti-settlement protest in a village west of Nablus, leaving dozens of Palestinians injured there. The troops also attacked Palestinians to the south of the city. Israel has stepped up its crackdown on Palestinians, killing at least 200 this year alone. Israel's President Isaac Herzog has visited the United States amid rising criticism of the Israeli regime over its treatment of Palestinians. The visit has proved to be a controversial one as several U.S. lawmakers boycotted Herzog's address to Congress. They argue that Herzog's visit to the United States legitimizes the Israeli regime's brutality against Palestinians.
The Israeli President Isaac Herzog has visited the United States and was welcomed by the U.S. establishment, including President Biden and senior congressmen. But a number of U.S. lawmakers, frustrated with the racist policies of the Israeli regime toward Palestinians, boycotted Herzog's speech to the U.S. Congress. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, Jamal Bowman, Cori Bush, and Nydia Velasquez, along with Senator Bernie Sanders, skipped the address. Ilhan Omar, an African-American congresswoman, was the first to make such a decision. In a tweet, Omar said the invitation, which comes during the deadliest year for Palestinians in the West Bank history, sends a wrong signal at a wrong time.
So let's just begin by setting up the context that this is 2023 in the aftermath of the legacy human rights organizations, Israeli human rights organizations, UN committees, UN agencies, as well as multiple scholars and independent investigations have all concluded that Israel oversees an apartheid regime.
The Israeli regime barred Omar and Palestinian-born Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib from visiting the occupied territories in 2019 over their support for Palestinian rights and membership in the Anti-Israel Caucus. Rights advocates have said that Herzog's visit has been a boost to the unquestionable U.S. support for Israel at a time when many of them are asking Biden to pressure Netanyahu's cabinet to end abuses against Palestinians.
And let's just get this record straight here. This is not something that's made up. The United Nations, Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, Israel's own largest human rights organization, B'Tselem, all agree that Israel is an apartheid state. To assert otherwise, Mr. Speaker, in the face of this just body of evidence is an attempt to deny the reality and to normalize violence of apartheid. Israel is an apartheid state. The government is deeply problematic in the way that they are proceeding in the structure of oppression.
The boycott has signaled increasing tensions among Democrats over the unwavering support of the U.S. establishment toward Israel. Tensions between House Democrats reached a boiling point after Pramila Jayapal, chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, described Israel as a racist state while speaking at a conference in Chicago.
I want you to know that we have been fighting to make it clear that Israel is a racist state, that the Palestinian people deserve self-determination and autonomy, that the dream of a two-state solution is slipping away from us.
...2023 has been a deadly and brutal year for Palestinians. Just weeks ago, Israel ended its extensive military raid on the Jenin refugee camp in the occupied West Bank. Palestinians also face frequent violent attacks by Israeli settlers. Internally, the Israeli regime is facing a crisis over Prime Minister Netanyahu's right-wing cabinet and his contentious judicial overhaul plan.
Following the remarks of Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, resolution was approved by the U.S. House of Representatives that voiced support for the Israeli regime. The resolution turned a blind eye to the crimes that were recently committed by Israeli troops in the occupied West Bank and ignored frequent settler violence against the people of Palestine. Israeli settlers also frequently attack Palestinian towns and villages under the protection of the Israeli military forces. Israel has been practicing an apartheid regime, a system of extreme racial segregation of people against Palestinians since 1948. That year, the regime claimed existence across Palestine after a Western-backed war, during which tens of thousands of Palestinians were forcibly expelled from their homes, villages were depopulated, and thousands were killed.
The United States is not just a bystander here. The United States is complicit and a pillar of Israeli apartheid in its provision on unequivocal financial, diplomatic, and military support. That but for that support, Israel could not sustain this regime, which is not surprising. Which is not surprising at all, because the U.S. was the last pillar to fall, the last domino to fall in sustaining apartheid in South Africa, where it had to fall in line with everyone else. But during apartheid South Africa and the international campaign against it during that regime's tenure, the United States issued the most vetoes within the Security Council to protect apartheid.
The world's prominent rights groups have already raised the alarm that the occupying regime is morphing into an apartheid system that gives Palestinians second-class status and is designed to maintain Zionist hegemony from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea. The Israeli oppression of Palestinians has witnessed a sharp rise under Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's extremist coalition cabinet, which is composed of far-right Zionist parties that oppose Palestinian statehood and support the expansion of settlements. Internally, the Israeli regime has also witnessed growing rifts and fragmentations, and the right-wing cabinet of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is pushing ahead with his controversial judicial overhaul plans. Just days ago, hundreds of reservists held a protest rally in Tel Aviv and vowed to no longer report for duty in protest against Netanyahu's proposed judicial changes. Protest organizers believe the increasing involvement of reservists would be a game-changer that could make Netanyahu scrap his scheme. The drive by Netanyahu's far-right cabinet to change the judiciary system and to strip the Supreme Court of some of its powers has sparked unprecedented protests in Israel since January.
Thousands of Afghan girls who are hoping to pursue higher education have been barred by the Taliban from the university entrance exam. The move has sparked anger and criticism among the girls and their families, as well as human rights advocates. Press TV's Rahmatullah Baghwan reports from Kabul.
Afghan female school graduates, like the ones here, are shedding tears of dismay after their exclusion by the Taliban rulers from the university entrance exam, also known as Concur. They have been studying hard for the national test in order to pursue higher education. But all that has been in vain, as the Taliban have announced that only male students can sit for the exam this year.
I wanted to pursue my higher education and become a leader and serve my people. But now they say that girls cannot take the university entrance exam. This is unfair and unjust. I am so sad and feel like my life is over.
I wanted to enroll in medical university and become a professional doctor and help my country prosper. But unfortunately, the Taliban shut the doors on our dreams and future and denied us our rights.
In a new report, UN human rights experts say the Taliban authorities have increased restrictions on women and girls in Afghanistan in recent months. The UN has urged the Taliban to respect and protect the rights of all Afghans, especially women and girls, and to ensure their access to education, healthcare, and other essential services.
With all these restrictions on women in place, Afghanistan's future is looking increasingly bleak. Girls and women are losing hope as they are being excluded from all political, social, and educational spheres.
The Taliban have not given any clear indication of when or if girls will be able to resume their studies at high schools or universities. They say they are upholding women's rights in accordance with their interpretation of Sharia law and Afghan culture. No other Muslim country in the world imposes such restrictions on women's education. The fate of Afghan girls remains uncertain as they are being barred from most educational settings. For many of them, education not only is a source of knowledge, but also a source of hope and empowerment. Rahmatullah Baghwan, Kabul.
The Ukrainian president has dismissed the country's ambassador to the UK days after the envoy publicly criticized him. A presidential order said Vadim Perestyko had also been removed as Ukraine's representative to the International Maritime Organization. The order did not detail the reason for Perestyko's removal or the person replacing him. In an interview last week, Perestyko said President Vladimir Zelensky's remarks about the UK defense secretary were unhealthy. Perestyko said there was some sarcasm in Zelensky's comment that he would wake up each morning and thank the UK defense secretary. This after Wallace said Ukraine's allies wanted to see gratitude and that the UK was not Amazon when it comes to weapons delivery. The Russian president says Ukraine's military counteroffensive is failing despite military and financial support for Western countries.
Today, it is clear that the Western curators of the Kyiv regime are clearly disappointed with the results of the so-called counteroffensive, which the current Ukrainian authorities have been loudly promoting in previous months. In any case, there are no results yet.
Addressing a Russian Security Council meeting, Putin said, as a result of what he called suicidal attacks, the Ukrainian armed forces have suffered extensive losses with tens of thousands of soldiers killed. The Russian president added that neither the supply of weapons nor the presence of foreign mercenaries and advisors have helped Kyiv. He said the U.S. wants to weaken Europe by fanning the flames of conflict. The Russian president suggested that European public opinion and even European elites are turning against the endless waste of money and effort on behalf of U.S. hegemonic interests. Since Russia launched the war in Ukraine last February, Western countries have been providing extensive military support to Kyiv. The U.S. has been Ukraine's largest military supporter with over $40 billion worth of aid. EU foreign affairs ministers consider a proposal from the European Commission to provide an additional 20 billion euros in financial support to the Ukrainian army. The plan comes as millions of citizens across the 27-nation bloc suffer from a worsening cost of living crisis. Britain's ruling party has lost two parliamentary seats in Thursday's by-elections regarded as a litmus test for the premiership of Rishi Sunak. Conservatives lost to the Liberal Democrats in Somerton and Frome, southwest England. Tories also lost their majority in the northern constituency of Selby and Anstey, where the opposition Labour Party won the seat. But the ruling party managed to retain its seat in a West London constituency. The seat was left empty after former Prime Minister Boris Johnson resigned as a Member of Parliament in June. The results of the three by-elections were announced as incumbent Sunak is facing division within his party. The Tories have been facing growing public discontent over a series of scandals as well as high inflation. That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
واقعیت زندگی
and try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن.
By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step brothers not the last one
هو الذی ارسل رسوله بالهدى و دین
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth that he may make it prevail over all religions though the polytheists should be averse
والذی ارسل رسوله بالهدى و دین الحق لیظهره علی الدین کله ولو کره المشرکون
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones. But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
In the limelight.
In Britain, a new study has indicated that up to 3 million British people behind on their bills have had mental health problems. The new study has suggested that people with recent mental health issues are 3 times more likely to be behind on at least one key bill. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Up to 3 million people in the United Kingdom who are behind with at least one bill have experienced a mental health problem in the last 2 years, according to new research. YouGov polling for the Money and Mental Health Policy Institute charity found that 12% of all people were behind on at least one payment, such as energy, rent, or credit cards, of whom half, or about 3 million, had a mental health problem. In all, people who have had mental health problems in the past 2 years are 3 times more likely to be behind on at least one significant bill, the report found, with 60% saying they felt unable to cope due to rising costs. Yet, only 9% have received money or debt advice since the start of the cost of living crisis. The charity Money and Mental Health Policy Institute calculates that the government could save more than £140 million a year and double recovery rates for people with depression and debt by joining up mental health and money support. It calls on the government and the National Health Service England to provide practical financial advice alongside National Health Service talking therapies. This would double recovery rates for people struggling with debt and depression, help an extra 27,000 people recover from mental health problems each year, and reduce waiting times for the mental health services. The authors of the new report calculate that these changes would save £39 million by reducing demand for health and social care services and generate £105 million in wider economic benefits and boost to workplace productivity, resulting in more people recovering from mental health problems. Martin Lewis, the chair and founder of the Money and Mental Health Policy Institute, said, "The cost of living crisis shows no sign of abating, and even if it does, the fallout will last for years. Financial problems and mental health issues are locked together. It's about time that treatments were linked too." For many years, therapists, mental health nurses, and social workers have told us they often spend substantial, valuable clinical time helping people with their finances. It makes more sense to leave debt help professionals to do that and take some pressure off the National Health Service, letting clinicians focus on helping people get better. Rachel, a 46-year-old from Cardiff in Wales, has had depression most of her life, but when she tried to come off her medication, she went into a downward spiral of spending and gambling and ran up debts of about £15,000. It's mad because the more debt you get in, the more the credit card companies will give you, she said. At one point, I had about 10 different credit cards. She says at no point did any health professional ask her how she was coping financially, and she felt unable to raise it herself. Suzanne Hoddy, a 37-year-old nurse from Leicester, says no one considered whether she could handle her finances on discharge from a mental health setting in 2017. Never at any point did anyone ask me, who's actually managing the house, all the bills? Is that going to be a potential issue when she gets home? She said. There was no thought of that. Had they done so earlier, Suzanne Hoddy might have avoided a court summons for failing to pay her council tax bill while an inpatient. Linking mental health and money services might mean an extra 5 minutes that you've had to spend with that person. But for that person's recovery, it's made a massive difference, she says. Dr. Subodh Dave, Dean of the Royal College of Psychiatrists, says psychiatrists were intensely aware of the significant impact of the cost of living crisis on patients' mental health. Dr. Subodh Dave said, debt may have disastrous consequences for individuals and their families. Clinicians can play their part by inquiring about their patients' financial situation and how this might be affecting their mental health status. Collaboration is needed from a range of other bodies, including financial advice services and social care organizations. A government spokesperson said, we're investing £2.3 billion of extra funding a year by March of 2024 to expand and transform mental health services in England to treat an additional 2 million patients. We've also helped nearly 2 million people out of absolute poverty since 2010 and provided a £94 billion support package worth about £3,300 per household to help those most in need. The British newspaper The Financial Times has also covered the same story and tells us more. Employee assistance programs are usually pretty dull affairs. For a few decades now, employers have paid employee assistance program providers to run phone lines their employees can call if they need support with personal problems. The idea is to provide some short-term support, a handful of counselling sessions, say, to help staff deal with mild problems before they get worse. But this year, employee assistance programs have found themselves facing a swelling wave of complex mental health problems brought to them by people with nowhere else to turn. We were never designed to be a crisis line, says Bertrand Stern-Gillett, who runs Health Assured, the biggest employee assistance program provider in the United Kingdom, with more than 80,000 clients. But he says high-risk calls have now become a daily occurrence, ranging from child or adult safeguarding concerns to someone who might have taken a significant amount of pills, or they might be standing on a bridge. The company is hiring more staff and managers to try to deal with the rising complexity and emotional intensity of the work. Andrew Kinder, head of mental health services at Optima Health, another employee assistance program, ran an online seminar about bereavement for the employees of one client. He expected about 40 attendees, but 1,200 people logged on. People were actually sharing quite a lot of experiences about what they've gone through, he says. Antidepressant usage is also on the rise. In 2021-2022, 8.3 million patients received at least one prescription item for antidepressant drugs in England, according to the data, 22% more than in 2015-2016. But what's going on? On the positive side, people have become more comfortable discussing their mental health status and asking for help. That's an improvement on the past when we had this undercurrent of need that wasn't even being talked about, says Vicky Nash, head of policy at mental health charity Mind. But it's clear that's not the whole story. The loneliness, the worry, grief and financial problems caused by COVID-19 and associated lockdowns appear to have damaged the mental health of people all over the world.
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint.
A critique of movies with religious themes on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program, Viewpoint, the Movie Critique Program on IRIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah, my guest speakers. Brother Yasser, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the program.
Alaykum salam wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh. It was a pleasure to be with you by the moment.
Thank you very much. Sayyid Abdullah, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the studio.
Wa alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. We are criticizing the movie Fatima from a couple of episodes ago onwards, and we haven't finished it, and inshallah hopefully we do that in this episode, which is I'm talking about the movie Fatima, produced in 2020, directed by Marco Pontecorvo. But before us actually getting into its critique, let's take a listen to a short part of the movie Fatima, and then we'll be back.
You must pray often and suffer greatly. Sacrifice yourself for sinners. Do not hurt yourselves with ropes. And repeat this prayer. O Jesus.
O Jesus.
I'm offering you this.
I'm offering you this.
I'm offering you this.
In exchange for your love.
In exchange for your love. For the conversion of sinners, and to amend sins committed against the Immaculate Heart of Mary.
Back to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. We are criticizing the movie Fatima, produced in 2020, with Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah. Well, Sayyid Abdullah, let me ask you about this part that we just listened to. Merjin Veri advises the girl, the seer, basically Lucia, to constantly pray. sacrifice herself for sinners, not hurt yourself with the ropes. This seems to be like one of those acts that mostly Christians do exactly, yeah. Right? That they tighten their girdle. And repeat a prayer. Oh, Jesus, I'm offering this in exchange for your love, for conversion of sinners, and to amend sins committed against the Immaculate Heart of Mary. Very strong message, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Apart from the part where it says, oh, Jesus, that we obviously don't agree with. It should have been something like, oh, Lord, oh, God, not oh, Jesus, basically, to avoid polytheism. Don't you agree? It's a very strong message, and it's a very pure and sincere prayer.
All the prayers to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, they're meant to be sincere and pure, and strong in their nature. And I think that whatever religion you take and you look, you will find that in their prayers, the message is always clear, the message is always strong, the message is always pure. It just, the difference is that to whom it is directed, that's the problem. So, for example, even the Quran, if you look at the Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala quotes people. He quotes Fir'aun, for example. He quotes different people. He quotes what they said. He quotes the Anbiya. He quotes the dua of the Anbiya. Because it's a genuine human expression that we do. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter what your faith is. But so always, like even me, sometimes when I look at the Bible, I read parts of the Bible. Some of the du'as are really beautiful.
Yes.
The way they formulated and the way they said. And I
not
think,
every part of the Bible is distorted.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I think this goes across the board with other religions as well. So sometimes you see a religion that you think it's, you know, way deviated, but the supplication, it's in its essence, it's really good.
Mm-hmm.
So what seems to happen is that I think it's not the dua itself that we have the issue with. It's like to whom it is addressed.
Mm-hmm.
Is it addressed to Buddha, for example? Is it addressed to Krishna? Or is it addressed to Jesus?
Mm-hmm.
To whom? And this is what the problem is. As far as the dua itself, some of the du'as, like you said, they're very powerful, they're very beautiful, they're very pure in their nature. And sometimes easier, even easier on the tongue as well.
Yes.
Especially in English.
Thank you very much, Sayyid Abdullah. Let's take a break by listening to a part of the movie Fatima, produced in 2020. Then we'll be back with his criticism. Don't go away.
It appears that Jacinta was the most mystic among you.
Yes, she was.
Maybe because she was younger. She was only 7. Maybe because you're too older and she was trying to outdo you.
No. She was that way. She had a gift. Did you see her body after she was exhumed?
Yes, I saw it. It was completely intact.
And you naturally believe it is just a coincidence?
No, it's different. I think it's incredible and unexplainable.
Back to the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio. With me, Mama Jad, hosting this program, and Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser, my guest speakers in the program, trying to help me criticize the movie Fatima, produced in 2020. Brother Yasser, you know, Lucia, the oldest of the children, the girl, the seer, asked the interviewer, of course, we are talking about the old Lucia, asked the interviewer or the professor, did you see the exhumed body of Jacinta, the 70-year-old girl? And he said, yes, it was intact. All right? Which is a miracle in and of itself, because it should have been like decomposed. I mean, the body should have been decomposed after that long and turned into dust after a long while. Is that a coincidence? Is there anything explainable about this?
The interviewer himself says that this is something unexplainable.
Yes.
I mean, he mentioned that in the movie, yes. Right? He gave an answer to the question. Well,
true.
Before it, because
he was representing like the scientific aspect.
Others, he was trying to critique it, right? He was trying to get to the, like you said, the nitty gritty of the things. Like, from before, like he asked that question, he mentions that she was the most mystical from the three, mm-hmm. because she was the youngest.
Yes.
And she was probably the most purest of the three.
Yes.
Because obviously we believe as well that the younger a child is, the purer that child is. She was seven, right? She was, you know, nowhere near the age of responsibility. She was pure. She grew up in a religious household.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you listen earlier in the movie, the parents said they've never lied.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they did what they had to do.
Even Lucia talked very well of her.
Exactly.
And she said she's the most mystic of all us.
Because that's what he asked, right?
Yeah.
And she said that, and this is where he asked that question of the body. Is it possible? Yeah, we've seen it in our own lifetime as well, with our bodies coming out intact. Why is that something that we may not know?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has decided that this particular person, again, on both sides, you can see that in terms of a righteous person, also in terms of, like, for example, a wretched person like Fir'aun and these type, also to a certain extent their body's being intact to a certain extent as a lesson,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, there are certain things that, you know, you won't be able to understand and explain. These are beyond physics, because as a person was saying, it's beyond science.
Yes,
you know, there is more than just the physical realm. There is more.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe this is what this movie tried to show, and the necessity, as we mentioned in the beginning, was to show that at the time of the war, of just death everywhere and mm-hmm. destruction, there is more to life. There is not just the physical. Why are you fighting for something that is fleeting? There is more to it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, again.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Let's take a break by listening to a part of the movie, Fatima, directed by Marco Pantagruel, and then we'll be back with his criticism. Don't go away.
Can you please tell us who you are? These people want to know.
Oh, she is.
I am the Lady of the Rosary. I am going to lead them to my son through peace and love.
Back to the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio, with me, Mama Jad, hosting this program, and Brother Yasser and Said Abdullah, my guest speakers, trying to help me criticize the movie Fatima, produced in 2020. Well, Said Abdullah, the children asked the lady, "Who are you?" in one of their visions, right? She answered, "I'm the Lady of the Rosary. I am going to lead you to my son through peace and love. You must not insult the Lord, who is already far too insulted. You have to pray. The war will end soon, and the soldiers return home." Right? Some people are never going to believe, like he's referring to that mayor, the atheist, even before the face of God. And then she points to the sun. Well, and the sun is shining like bigger than normal, right? As if it is falling. So everyone, you know, becomes afraid and scared, and they begin to escape. So it looks like another miracle, apparently, which is well documented in the history, as being, you know, suggested and written at the end of this movie in the caption. That says it's a miracle of the sun, which happened on October 19th, well, in 1917. Well, around, this is what they claim, 70,000 people witnessed it, the extraordinary phenomenon, and both believers and non-believers actually witnessed it, right? Even we have at the end of this movie a quotation from Albert Einstein. There are only two ways to live your life. One is as though nothing is a miracle. The other is as though everything is a miracle. Well, another miracle, apparently. Don't you agree?
I do agree. So with this event, the dancing of the sun, it's sometimes, like, when I was looking at it and I was trying to do a bit of search on it as well, it doesn't add up. I mean, considering the fact that you have from 30 to 70,000 people with their cameras, with their video cameras, with their, I mean, even though it wasn't as, you know, advanced as now, the video cameras and the media, But there were a lot of reporters, there were a lot of photographers, there was a lot of, you know, these old rolling cameras. So there was a lot of people out there. But yet we haven't had any evidence, or unless it's been emitted, which is quite possible, mm-hmm. That's been destroyed, these things. So there was nothing of this particular miracle, except the priest himself who was there, was appointed by the church. I think he wrote about two or three books about this phenomenon, mm-hmm. but he kept relating it to Mary and Jesus, alayhum assalam. Mm-hmm. So, at the end of the day, I don't see... I mean, the lady herself, she appeared 6 times to the kids. Yes. And at the end, she said, everyone's going to see a miracle. They said that because it was raining before that, right? And then everything was wet and the floor was muddy. And then the sun came down to a very close proximity to people. And then they were dry all of a sudden, instantly. The ground was dry instantly. So, one thing for sure, everything was saying that they saw the colors. Things that were changing, colors were happening. Mm-hmm. The sun was zigzagging and moving, and so it's possible. It's, you know, we can't deny nor can we confirm unless we have like very solid evidence.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be a miracle from Allah Subhanahu wa Taala. It could be ajaz. It could be just the, I don't know, people were just high on weed. I don't know.
I see. Okay, thank you very much, Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser, for your nice contribution to the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio, in which we try to criticize and finish criticism of the movie Fatima, produced in 2020, directed by Marco Pontecorvo. Thank you very much. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
In the limelight.
Political analysts unanimously believe that the U.S. financial hegemony is about to end soon. This time, senior Russian MP Anatoly Akosakov has said that America will cease to exist as a global economic powerhouse in 10 years, and that the clock is ticking on U.S. financial hegemony. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to RT, mounting debt and a reliance on sanctions have jeopardized U.S. credibility as an economic partner and may soon shatter its image as a global financial power. Anatoly Akosikov, the head of Duma's Financial Market Committee, told Izvestia news outlet at St. Petersburg International Economic Forum, SPIEF, recently. According to the senior lawmaker, the U.S. share in global trade turnover is rapidly dropping, a trend likely to continue in the coming years. He said, "We see that the U.S. share in the world trade has shrunk to about 70%, in part due to sanctions against Russia, which undermined confidence in the U.S. currency. Previously, 70% of international trade was serviced by the dollar. Now it is 60%. Can you imagine 10% in just a short period of time? This is significant. Naturally, this process will continue because the U.S. undermines partners' trust with their actions. So, of course, not in 1 or 2 years, but in 10 years, America as a great financial power will cease to exist," Akosikov added. The head of the Duma's Financial Market Committee noted that, apart from the flaws in its foreign policy, the U.S. has been plagued by problems due to its economic policies at home. He said the U.S. can, one of these days, let everyone down because effectively it cannot pay its debts. The gross domestic product it produces is less than the debts it accumulates, and whatever the country earns will not be enough to pay its debts. Meanwhile, the U.S. keeps borrowing all over the world and pays out by building up domestic debt. So eventually, there will come a time when there will be so much debt that it will become impossible to fulfill obligations, and then the U.S. economy will collapse. The U.S. narrowly avoided its first ever debt default earlier this month when President Joe Biden signed a bill that suspended the limit on Washington's $31.4 trillion in debt until January 1, 2025. This means that the U.S. government can continue to pay for services at home, such as Social Security and Medicare, by borrowing money abroad and effectively amassing even more debt. According to Reuters, Andrei Kostin, head of Russia's banking major VTB, has said the hegemony of the U.S. dollar is seriously challenged by the rise of the Chinese yuan and by Washington's failed attempts to wreck the Russian economy by weaponizing the greenback. The major banking figure said that under the current geopolitical circumstances, more and more nations are shifting away from trade settlements in dollar and euro, while China is moving towards removal of strict currency policies. The long historical era of the dominance of the American dollar is coming to an end, Kostin said in an interview with the news agency Reuters, adding, "I think that the time has come when China will gradually remove currency restrictions." According to Kostin, VTB has been discussing using the Chinese national currency in settlements with third countries. He explained, "China understands that they will not become world economic power number one if they keep their yuan as a non-convertible currency," adding that it was also dangerous for the People's Republic to keep reserves invested in U.S. treasuries. the U.S. dollar has been enjoying the status of the world's reserve currency for more than a century after it managed to subsume the British pound sterling. Earlier this month, J.P. Morgan Chase analysts said the global economy is showing signs of the emergence of de-dollarization against a background of rising efforts by Asian economies to challenge the American currency's hegemony. The greenback's long-standing status as the world's dominant currency has been steadily eroded in recent years due to mounting concerns over soaring U.S. debt and widely implemented sanctions using the currency as leverage. The process of diversifying away from the greenback by countries around the world is gathering pace, according to the latest data from the International Monetary Fund. The statistics tracked by the Washington-based institution show that the dollar's share of official gold and foreign currency reserves dropped to a nearly three-decade low of 58% in the fourth quarter of 2022. The move has reportedly been gradual, and the dollar share of central banks' foreign reserves is now nearly down to a level last seen in 1995. The long-standing status of the dollar as the world's dominant currency has been steadily eroded in recent years amid concerns over soaring U.S. debt and widely implemented sanctions using the currency as leverage. The shift was more pronounced when adjusted for exchange rates, according to Stephen Jen, CEO of Eurozone SLJ Capital Limited, as quoted by Reuters. He said, "What happened in 2022 was a very sharp plummeting in the dollar share in real terms, calling the decline a reaction to the freezing of half of Russia's $640 billion in gold and FX reserves." According to Jen, the drastic step sparked a rethink in countries like Saudi Arabia, China, India, and Turkey about diversifying their reserves to other currencies. The yuan's share of global over-the-counter forex transactions has increased from nearly zero 15 years ago to 7%, according to the Bank for International Settlements, BIS. After the move against Russia, other countries are questioning, what if you fall on the wrong side of sanctions? BNY Mellon strategist Jeffrey Yu told the media. He said global central banks are currently seeking to diversify their assets, scooping up corporate debt, tangible assets such as real estate and other currencies. Mark Tinker, managing director of Tosa Fund Hong Kong, told the agency, "This is the process that is underway. The dollar is going to be used less in the global system."
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.